Hi there, a very warm welcome to the Sweet Spot. It's Bruce Millington and Steve Palmer looking ahead to three tournaments this week, looking back on what happened last week. First of all, Steve, how are you all set for Christmas?
I haven't really thought about that yet. Yeah, it's not December yet, is it?
No, I didn't expect you to say, I've got it all done. Everything's wrapped up, yeah.
Well, December the 1st is when the trees come out, isn't it? So, it won't be long, but not in my thoughts at the moment. Still thinking about Casey Jarvis, to be honest.
Oh, yeah? Blimey. That's not something that everyone's thinking about, I don't think. But tell us more. Why are you thinking about Casey Jarvis?
Oh, it was just such a tease last week. I mean, I know you were following his progress as well, but it's our 300-1 chance in the Joburg Open, and one beautiful moment on Saturday morning, he was three shots ahead. He held a long eagle putt, ridiculously long eagle putt, and went three shots ahead. But then slowly but surely, the dreams were shattered.
Did you allow yourself a cheeky look at the in-play markets when that eagle putt rolled in just to see what he was doing?
I didn't. Did you allow yourself?
No, I didn't. I'm very pessimistic, Steve. I'm not like you. You kind of have this idea. You'll text me and go, they might as well give him the trophy now, or this is all over. And I'm like, no.
You had high hopes for a place return at that point, didn't you? When you're three shots clear it in round three, you at least hope for a place return. I mean, my standard each way investments these days are eight places. And he had the temerity to end up finishing ninth. You know,
he had a share of ninth, because I actually took the very cowardly route and I backed him with a bookmaker who offered 10 places at much, much shorter prices. So I got half my stake. So I won. But yeah, it was desperately disappointing.
That's very clever of you. You can just keep going and going there, can't you? You can get to 12 each way places if you're so inclined.
And what you can also do, Steve, is you can take your stakes. So say you're having five each way on someone. You could have £2 at six places, £2 at eight places, and £1 at 10 places, couldn't you? You know, you're not obliged to just have that one bet. There's so many different ways you can try and make money these days.
That's a really good point. But I mean, people who have had like a win-only bet on Jarvis would have had high hopes at one point. You know, he was 16 under par for the first 39 holes, and then played the rest of the tournament in four over par. So, he's 19 years of age. You know, we always say this, how would we have handled that situation at 19 years of age? You know, I suppose we shouldn't be too angry at him. You know,
he just clearly got the jitters.
He did well, he got the jitters. We move on.
He looks a bit like, and this is a observation with probably the most niche audience ever, but he looks a bit like the Racing Post, sorry, not the Racing Post, the Telegraph's racing correspondent, Marcus Armitage, who rode the Grand National winner on Mr. Frisk. You're not going to know that, are you? Because you wouldn't know what Marcus Armitage looks like. And very few people will, but he does. If they ever make a film about Marcus Armitage, which is probably unlikely, I think they'll get Casey Jarvis to play the part of the young Marcus Armitage.
I'm doing the same face that I did to my daughter when she did a magic trick to me this morning. She started getting into doing magic tricks. So I give her encouragement by going like this, as if like I can't work out how it's happening.
It's not an encouraging face. What the hell are you doing? Yeah.
Are you telling me there's another Marcus Armitage then? Obviously, there's a golfer called Marcus Armitage.
We should get that out there. Yeah, Marcus Armitage is the Grand National winning jockey and Daily Telegraph racing correspondent, as well as the golfer. Yeah, that's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that's total state of bewilderment now.
Yeah, there's two Marcus Armitages.
What are the chances?
Yeah, so if Marcus Armitage ever wins the Open and everyone starts singing, one Marcus Armitage, you can say, whoa, whoa, whoa.
No, I'm struggling to get my head around that because it's quite an unusual name.
It's mad, isn't it? Yeah.
It's like that a fellow R sign managing Arsenal for a
while. Yeah, you could never get over that, could you?
Still not over that.
You still think that's underrated, that more should be made of it, don't you?
Tell
us about Dan Bradbury, who held on to win the, well, not just held on to win the Joburg Open. It was an imperial performance by him. What price was he at the outset, for goodness sake? I mean, you must have struggled to have heard of him.
He was 225-1 at the outset, the same price as Tristan the Piston last year. So we've had two 225-1 chances. He was making only his third DP World Tour start, only turned pro in July, 23 years of age. So Royal Rover stuff. I mean, he dropped a clue. It wasn't a big enough clue for me. He was 13th in the Spanish Open on another sponsor's invite. So it's a funny old game. Richard Boxall actually made a a sensible comment on
Blimey.
Sunday. It's actually talking about how, you know, luck is probably the most important thing in anything. You don't win many tournaments without getting a little bit of luck along the on the line. And it really settled Bradbury down on Sunday when he chipped in, didn't he? He had a really long chip in. And then he followed that up with a long putt that was going about 100 miles an hour. It was going to miss the hole. And that
was going to de-green, wasn't it, that one?
Yeah,
that
one. I think so. So, I mean, you get those little breaks and you start thinking name on the trophy stuff, don't you? It really does relax you when you get a little bit of luck.
I think luck is one of the most underrated factors in sport. I think in football, between now and the World Cup final 3 weeks hence, the team that wins the trophy will definitely need some luck. You have to, don't you? I mean, yeah. I asked Kevin Pullin how much a game of football is settled by randomness, or, you know, just like it could have hit the post, but it just went in, you know, those kind of fine margins. And he says it's pretty high. So you do have to factor in a bit of luck, don't you?
You do. And, I've watched a few football matches in the last few weeks. You know, that Germany-Spain game, you know, I really needed goals in that one. And, you know, Germany looked like they taken the lead, didn't they? You know, they're celebrating with their fans for ages. You know, the scoreboard changes to 1-0 Germany, and then they VAR'd it because he's got a toenail offside. And it's fine margins, it's luck.
That's the one game I didn't watch, actually, because ages ago we booked up to go and see Frank Skinner, and to which I was really looking forward to. And then as the date loomed, I thought, hang on a sec, this is going to clash with a major World Cup fixture. And sure enough, it did. But I didn't mind. When I saw the outcome of the game, I was more than happy that we weren't to see Frank Skinner.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's a football fan, isn't he? I'm surprised he's putting on shows during the World Cup. But I thought Germany had gone one up. I was on the overs, three or more goals, and I weren't bored with that. Sunday was just near misses. Jarvis missed out by a shot. I needed three goals in that game and there was only two. And then Luke Humphreys in the darts. Have you been betting on darts? Luke Humphreys in the darts, lost in the semi-finals. I had a nice each way bet on him at the start of the tournament, 14-1. So yeah, near misses. I'm looking for the worm to turn this week.
Okay, before we do that, we better talk about Cameron Smith, who justified favouritism in emphatic fashion, even in the Australian PGA. I say emphatic fashion. I mean, he was slow to start, wasn't he? But once he cranked in top gear those final 54 holes, he was in a league of his own, wasn't he?
Well, yeah, you say he was slow to start. Yeah, one over par through the first nine holes. I mean, I was
that's
at a public
slow to
house.
Start, isn't it?
I was hoping you'd be able to tell me what price he drifted to, because I was at a public house and wasn't monitoring it. But one over through nine, he must have drifted to, you know, some sort of price. But then he was 15 under for his final 63 holes, and the Queenslanders were going crazy. I mean, if you watch the closing stages of that, Jason Scrivener was putting the willies up Cameron Smith a little bit, but then Scriven a double bogeyed 16, was it? Capitulated. But yeah. Minwoo Lee got the place money. Full place return for Minwoo Lee.
He had a very poor second round, didn't he?
Yes. Three good rounds, one terrible round. But yeah, the full place return from Minwoo Lee made me feel a lot better about that tournament. I'm not beating myself up.
Good. Yeah, don't beat yourself up, Steve. Okay, any other reflections on last week, or should we look ahead to this week's three tournaments?
Well, exactly, yeah. We've got three golf tournaments, we've got World Cups, we've got all sorts of things happening, haven't we?
Have we? What else?
World Darts Championship looming large. The draw was made yesterday.
Was it?
Well, you're talking about Christmas. I mean, the World Darts Championship starts in 15 days, I believe.
Okay, fair enough. Well, we might hold that for just 1 minute with so much to get on with. Should we start off with what we're going to start off with? The Australian, are we?
I was trying to bend your ear beforehand, wouldn't it? I love chronological order. You know, we've got to get our bets on by 8 p.m. Wednesday night on this golf tournament. Let's go Aussie Open.
Okay, right. We'll start off with the ISPS Handa Australian Open, where Cameron Smith is 5-2 to continue his domination. What a year he's had. Incredible. And then Adam Scott and Minwoo Lee come next at 10-1, 11-1 Cam Davis, 16 Mark Leishman and Ryan Fox, 20 Lucas Herbert. We'll find out why he pulled out last week in a minute. And Rasmus Højgaard, 25 Barr, Schopper. And those are indicative prices. There will be better odds available probably and differing place terms. And as we said earlier, it always pays to just, you know, see how many places you've got and make a decision on how risk averse you want to be. But anyway,
You're right. I'm really interested in your theory about spreading your bet across different each way terms. I mean, that's thinking outside the box. I don't think I've ever seen you so far outside the box there. And it's impressed me.
I think I can get fairly far outside the box. I think there's three strands to being a good punter: judgment, discipline, strategy. And by strategy, I mean making the most of your selection and learning when to trade and how to bet the each ways and how to split your stakes. So I'm always really interested in the strategy of it. So, yeah
there's so many markets out there.
Well, now same bookmakers, like I say, are offering, say, 6, 8, and 10 places. So you split your stakes in three and do them on each. And then that way, you know, if they do finish third or fourth, you get a chunk of it is on the juicier odds. You know, it just makes sense to me.
And don't forget the top 20 market. If you back Casey Jarvis in the top 20 market last week, I don't know what price it was because I didn't go down that sensible route. But that would be juicy, really juicy.
I do. 5-1.
Was it 5-1 for top 20?
I'll tell you why I did that, because I've got this new thing where I'm backing, as well as very small stakes each way doubles on your selections. Last week I started backing top 20 doubles.
Yeah,
and would you believe Jaden Schaefer got a little bit of that?
Yeah, finished 18th, didn't he? Yeah. There's ways and means, isn't there?
You know, my eggs are going in so many different baskets at the moment. You wouldn't believe
it. I like your style.
Thanks, mate. Right then, so where are we? What sort of track is it? What kind of players will it suit and how many selections?
We're plural on the tracks. We got two tracks here for the Aussie Open. We're at Victoria Golf Club and Kingston Heath Golf Club, Melbourne, Australia, the famous Melbourne Sandbelt, a golfing mecca for tourists. Victoria will stage three of the four rounds. Kingston Heath will stage one of the four. It's a RSM classic style system, if you will. Victoria is a 6,811 yard par 70. It's a tiddler. Kingston Heath is a 7,269-yard par 72. 156 runners go into post. Top 60 make the halfway cut. Top 35.
Yeah.
We've got a secondary cut here. Top 35 make the third round cut because we've got an Australian Women's Open simultaneously. So the broadcast will have ladies and gentlemen going at it on the same golf courses. I've got loads of calls for them I could bore you with from various different tournaments, but it takes so long. It literally would take 10 minutes.
I think you're probably best off plucking out the gold from that big pile of calls for them, aren't you?
Exactly.
Really, that's the way forward.
Exactly.
Right then, how many selections have we got, Steve?
Four!
Brilliant. It's nice to hear the a lusty four again after last week's very, very low-key attempt.
No excuses, really. We're winding down. This is the last real big week of action.
Is it?
Well, yeah, we got three more golf tournaments to go. We've got two next week and one after that, and then with Christmas holidays.
Lovely stuff. Okay, Steve, who is your headliner here?
It is a Cameron, but it's not the Cameron Smith. It's the Cameron Davis, 12-1, who's done something that Cameron Smith hasn't done. He has won the Australian Open before. Cameron Davis won the 2017 edition. Brilliant final round, 64. A Korn Ferry Tour victory followed in 2018, and then a PGA Tour breakthrough came last year in the Rocket Mortgage Classic. Davis, class act, the swing, technical perfection. As an amateur, it was obvious he was going to be a superstar. He won the 2014 Victoria Amateur at Victoria Golf Club. We got three rounds this week. He won the 2015 Australian Amateur. He's 27 now, and he's taken an extra layer of confidence from the President's Cup. He was good in the President's Cup. He won 2 points from five matches. Very unlucky to draw Jordan Spieth in the singles on the Sunday. And I like his build-up to this week. Much more relaxed than a lot of his market rivals. He finished 13th in the CJ Cup. Then he took a month off. He went home to Australia, caught up with some old friends in Sydney that he hadn't seen for ages. And then last week, a little bit rusty in the Aussie PGA to start with, but 66-68 over the weekend to finish seventh. Nobody outscored him over those final 36 holes. And there's a lot more wind around this week than there was last week. Stiffer ball striking test, perfect for Davis.
Brilliant. Next up,
Harrison Endicott, 66-1. Another PGA Tour star jetting over for this. Nicely relaxed. You know, he knows he's got a PGA Tour card in his pocket for next year. This is just a bonus event. He won a Korn Ferry Tour event in May. Five-shot victory. And he's made a very solid start to his PGA Tour career. 12th place in the Fortinet Championship. 10th spot in the Bermuda Championship. Another each-way heartbreak for me. And then last week, like Davis, bit of a sluggish start in the Aussie PGA. Maybe a bit of jet lag in the system because he played the RSM Classic the previous week. Open with a 73, but then rounds of 69, 69, 68. Finished 18th. I think Endicott's got a massive chance at a big price. He was runner-up in the 2018 Vic Open.
Lovely stuff. Two down, two to go.
Two big prices to finish the four-pronged attack. Hayden Hopewell at 150-1.
Hayden
great
Hopewell.
Name, isn't it?
Yeah,
what
brilliant.
A great name. Mr. Hopewell. He's one of many
two
really
lovely
promising
words, Hope and Well. Isn't that like merged together to make a lovely surname? Wow. Hayden Hopewell.
Even hay's a nice word. You're like nothing like watching a horse munching on some hay.
And a den. It? Make yourself a like, you and know, a when den. You're a child, you make yourself a nice little den, wouldn't you?
Yeah, oh, I'd love making dens. I mean, it's probably the best name in the history of golf. And he's one of many really promising Australian youngsters coming through the ranks. He turned 21 at the weekend. He won on the Australasian Tour in 2020. He won again on the Australasian Tour in February this year. He was 15th in the Vic Open this year. So he's proved himself in his home tour. And I suspect he's a really, really good wind player. I know we say every Australian is a good wind player, but there's certain parts of Australia that are particularly windy. And his home track is Royal Fremantle. And it's always windy in Fremantle. I used to live nearby.
The wind had its own name, didn't it?
Yes, the Fremantle Doctor.
Yeah.
The Fremantle Doctor was that, you know, I used to appreciate the Fremantle Doctor because it used to provide a nice cooling breeze when you were getting really, really hot. So this lad plays his whole life in a breeze as Hayden Hopewell. He'll be licking his lips at the forecast this week. His nickname, it gets even better. His nickname's even better than his real name.
You don't need a nickname if you've got Hayden Hopewell, but go on, what is it?
His nickname is Houdini. Houdini Hopewell, because he's got this reputation for miraculous recovery shots. So, yeah, Hayden Houdini Hopewell.
Oh, that's absolutely superb. Thank you for bringing Hayden Houdini Hopewell into my life, Steve. Let's hope he goes well. That's brilliant. Who's to fight? You can't really follow that, can you? You're going to go like Doug Smith or something.
It's a very basic name, actually. We're keeping the faith with him from last week. It's Jack Thompson, who is 200-1 as we live and breathe. He finished 48th last week. Both Hopewell and Thompson got four rounds under the belt last week without making a serious impact. I expect better this week. They've both been impressing on the Australasian tour. Thompson won the Gippsland Super Six in Victoria last year. And I watched the final round of that and it was really, really windy. Thompson seems a really solid all-rounder to me, comfortable in tough conditions. He was fifth in the Victorian PGA earlier this month. 24, bright future.
Why wouldn't you back Cameron Smith? I mean, he's arguably the world's best golfer at the moment. He's on the crest of a wave. He's absolutely nerveless. He's fresh. I mean, you know, what's not to like? The price?
I don't know about fresh. He was admitting he had a headache. Enough, yeah. He actually got inebriated by the sounds of it after his victory, and he admitted he had a massive headache the next day. So he hasn't got much time to recover from that. But the main thing, obviously, the odds 5-2, not particularly attractive. But you certainly wouldn't be backing him before the draw comes out. There's this potential for draw bias. Thursday afternoon is the windiest part of the week. You don't want to be out on Thursday afternoon. If he avoids that, then the high rollers might dip in. I mean, do you want his course form? I mean, it's pretty important to.
Definitely.
I mean, there's not a lot of it. In the 2011 Australian Amateur, two of the four stroke play rounds were at Victoria in that. Smith was joint leader after four rounds. So joint leader after the stroke play, lost in the second round of the match play. So that's his Victoria form. His Kingston Heath form, 30th in the 2012 Australian Masters. And he was joint leader after one round of the 2013 Open qualifier there. So, he's done all right in limited experience.
OK, just a quick word on Lucas Herbert, because he's quite prominent in the betting. Was that an injury or what?
That was an injury sustained on the driving range prior to round two, a back injury. So he's desperately trying to get fit for the Australian Open. I was pretty angry at him because he made back-to-back birdies and then withdrew. So he was threatening to fight back into it, but he decided to protect his back for future battles. He's desperate to play in this, but yeah, you can't be certain he's 100% fit.
No, should we move across to South Africa?
I think we should.
South African Open. Here are the latest indicative prices. 12-1 joint favourites, Dean Burmester and Brandon Grace. And then Tristan the Piston Lawrence is 20, along with Charles Schwartzel. Gorgeous George Coates here is 25, along with Romain Langasque. Dylan Fratelli, 28. Valco Nienaber, 28. It's like Noah's Ark, this. A 2x2. Henny Duplessis, 30, along with Adrian Ottetegui. I didn't say that properly. And it's 33 bar. So, very familiar look to this. There's no particular superstars jetting into any luster to it, but should be a fairly interesting betting heat, this. Let's find out about the venue.
It's the Blair Athol Golf and Equestrian Estate. You can pop over and do a bit of equestrian before your golf. Johannesburg, South Africa. 8,233 yards.
I'm sorry.
I thought that would get your attention. 8,233 yards par 72, five par fives, five par threes. Yeah, it's at altitude. It's at altitude. But yeah, this is a beast of a track. 156 runners going to post. Blair Athol is the third longest course in the world, designed by Gary Player. Gary Player lived on this estate for more than 20 years. Yeah, the ball flies far in, you know, altitude. But yeah, obviously really, really long. I'll give you a little taste of it. The 14th, 15th and 16th are where it really shows its teeth. They're all par fours. 524 yards, 566 yards, 560 yards, all par fours.
How can a par four be 560 yards? That's impossible. Well, that's a par six.
This is it. You know, they're trying to catch up with modern technology. You know, very wide fairways, but there's a river running through the course, Crocodile River. Water is impaling 11 holes. Yeah, I don't know whether there's any actual crocodiles in it, but we've got one piece of course form, 2021 Sunshine Tour event, the Blair Athol Championship, and 12 under par won that. So, yeah, they can conquer it, but I think shorter drivers are really up against it. I mean, you went through the names there. Did you notice Christian Bezuidenhout is not in there? I mean, Christian Bezuidenhout, he played the Nedbank. He's playing the Alfred Dunhill next week. He obviously doesn't fancy Blair Athol. You know,
is he not really a mighty hitter?
No, he's not. And, you know, maybe he just doesn't fancy. But it's his national open and he's in South Africa. It's surprising he's not there.
Yeah, wow. This is an intriguing course, this. I'm looking forward to this. How many selections have we got here, Steve? Whoa, loudest ever. Lead on then, Steve, with your main man.
We've got a 4-4-2 formation this week, which is like a World Cup theme, isn't it? Actual formation. We've got two in the hero, so 4-4-2. And Charles Schwarzel at 22-1 is the number one choice for this one. We had a LIV golfer winning the Australian PGA last week. I think we're going to get a LIV golfer winning the South African Open. Schwarzel has been eager to win his national. He's never won his national open. He's come close on several occasions. You know, he said how much he wants to do it before he retires. His great mate, Louis Oosthuizen, of course, it was in floods of tears when he won it. You know, it does mean a lot of these guys win the South African Open. Oosthuizen's had a little niggle in that final LIV event, so he's not here this week. But the venue for this edition gives Schwarzel a fantastic opportunity. This is uncharted terrain for most of the field, but Schwarzel used to live here. He's still a member of the course. He knows it like the back of his hand. Loads of practice there. He's the unofficial course record holder in a social four-ball with some pals. He carded a round of 60 here, so... Think about how long this course is. You'd be planning to shoot 150, wouldn't you?
I'd be teeing off at the eighth, having taken 50, 60 shots. That's mad, isn't it?
Well, that's it. I mean, if you can propel the ball the distances these guys can, they can conquer it. And Schwarzel is still one of the biggest hitters in the world. His LIV golf form has been solid enough. He won the first event, LIV London. More recently, seventh in Chicago, ninth in Jeddah, played well in that Miami finale. And what I've really liked about Schwarzel lately is his putting stroke. You know, it's been a bugbear for so long for him, and he's tried everything, you know, weird, different putters, different grips. But when I've seen him lately on the LIV, he's had a conventional stroke, a proper putter, and he's looked really solid. So I've been looking for a way to support Schwarzel, and finally, it's come. This is a great opportunity. You know, he's a prolific winner of DP World Tour events in South Africa. 8 victories on the DP World Tour in South Africa, 2 Joburg Opens. He's a Joburg boy. He's in Joburg this week. I think he's going to be a joyous Joburg man.
Wow, you make a very strong case there for Schwarzel. Who do you see as the chief danger?
It's the 14-1 about Dean Burmester. I think we're going to get a Burmester versus Schwarzel duel on Sunday, and we're going to see some incredible driving. You know, yeah, Burmester has not been back to South Africa since finished runner-up in the Stein City Championship in March. You might remember his battle with Sean Norris there, and Burmester finished second. He's an 8-time Sunshine Tour winner. One of those was a DP World Tour event, the 2017 Tshwane Open. He's a 2-time DP World Tour champion, but his status has really gone up recently. He's now a PGA Tour golfer, is Dean Burmester. He was excellent in the Corn Ferry Tour finals at the end of the summer. 2 top fives in that. He's secured his stateside dream. Prior to that, he was 11th in the Open. He started his PGA Tour career in really solid fashion, 4th place in the Sanderson Farms. He's the world number 60, for goodness sake. Things are really happening for Burmester at the age of 33. He fully deserves to be a short price in this. Yeah, it's a low-grade affair. And I think, there must have been a temptation for him to just focus on this stateside adventure, have a little rest this week. But when he saw the card of the course like you did, he probably went,
I bet he did. By the way, I'm just thinking ahead. We're only 6 weeks away from these Hawaii events. Did you see on the news that the volcano in Hawaii, the main volcano, is erupting? spewing lava all over the place. So I don't know if that's going to affect Kapalua or what's the other track they play at?
Why? How long does it take to clear up lava then?
Well, never.
Just get your broomstick.
You can't clear up lava. That's it. Just reshapes the terrain, doesn't it? But anyway, let's worry about that nearer the time. We've got quite enough on our plates.
We've got two more.
Go on then.
We got two more at nice prices. We got 100-1 shot here, and it's Tom McGibbon. 19-year-old broke my heart last week in the Joburg Open. I'm a glutton for punishment. I'm going for another 19-year-old this week. This is a Northern Irishman. His home club is actually Hollywood, which is in the same town. He's basically the new Rory McIlroy. You know, the comparisons are inevitable given they both play at Hollywood Golf Club. McGibbon has clearly got a bright future, and he's made great strides this year. And the stride started in South Africa because on the Challenge Tour in the Cape Town Open in February, he was third. And then he was seventh in the Johnson Workwear Open in Durban just after.
Don't
that.
Do it. You must remember that, please.
The Johnson Workwear. Have you got some Johnson Workwear?
Well, I haven't. I've got any workwear, no.
But he made a fantastic start to the year in South Africa. He had a brilliant summer. He's been fantastic all year. He's played once on the DP World Tour and finished 10th in the ISPS Handa World Invitational. And then last week, he was 18th in the Joburg Open on his return to South Africa. So, yeah, I think McGibbon is going places. I can't find a reason why he can't win this. And don't forget, you might make a comparison with Casey Jarvis like I did because they're the same age. But McGibbon has got a tour card in his pocket. You know, he's got a tour card in his pocket from this Challenge Tour heroics. So I don't think he'll get the jitters like Jarvis did.
OK, fair enough. I'm just on the Johnson Workwear website.
There's
a fellow who looks like Mile Jedinak on the front. Do you remember the Australian fellow who used to play for Palace with a great big beard?
I might buy a jumper off that website later. I'm on a four jumper strategy at the moment.
I don't know if they sell jumpers. It's more kind of overalls and things. There's a picture of this burly fisherman with a nice bright blue kind of overall. I don't know how much that costs. You never know. It might be one to tell Nicky for your Christmas present, mightn't it?
Yeah, I've been putting so many jumpers on lately. I struggle to move my arms.
Really?
You know, there is a limit that you put jumpers.
So you could win the World Strip Poker Championship dressed like that, couldn't you? How many layers have you got on?
I got five on today, but
five.
If you start getting into the six and sevens, you can't move your arms. So it's a fine balancing act.
So what? Just take us through what those five layers are. What's the inner one?
That's an actual thermal. My wife bought me some thermals. Yeah, I've got long johns on as well.
Thermal top, then what over that?
Then it's just a series of jumpers. I put my prettiest one on the top for sweet spot viewers there. But
blimey, you're virtually bulletproof there, aren't you? You've got something
like I am. Let's hope.
Come on then, final selection for South Africa Open.
The aforementioned Jaden Trayshaper, keeping the faith, 60-1 this week. He was the best junior in South Africa. He was the best amateur in South Africa. He was sixth in the South African Open at the start of 2020 when he was still an amateur. Now he tees up in the South African Open with two more years of experience under his belt. He's a Sunshine Tour leaderboard regular. As you say, last week, slow start, but finished like a train. He closed with a 65. Nobody outscored Jaden Trayshaper on Sunday in the Joburg Open. He's one of few players in this field with positive course experience. He played in the Blair Athol Championship last year. Finished 12th.
Oh, that's
it. Right. Did you have an incident there?
I did have a slight incident. I sort of moved my left hand and it yanked the almost yanked the headphones out of my ears. So, but I'm okay now. I've regained my equilibrium. So sorry. Did I interrupt you there, or have you finished?
No. I think that's the end of our South African adventure.
All right, then. Should we move across to what's our Christ? I'm still on the Johnson Workwear site.
We're saving the best till last, aren't we? Which is what I like to do with my dinners. I'm so pleased that we've got chronological order for this one. And we're saving the best tournament till last, which is what you should always do. This is my little tip for people having their dinners. Yeah, if there's something on the plate you're not particularly excited about, eat that first while you're really, really hungry. And the really good stuff, you know, the sausages or the really tasty stuff. Save that till last.
Really?
It worked really well.
I go with a sort of standard balanced, you know, I'd have some sausage, then some veg, then some potato, just to, you know.
I compartmentalise, you know. If you've got some broccoli, you need to get that in early while you're really hungry, don't you? Because you can't eat that at the end.
Oh, the key for good broccoli is roast it.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, always roast broccoli. Right then, anyway, without further ado, the Hero World Challenge takes place over in America, and it's a really good field. We were supposed to have Tiger Woods back, but we don't. Steve will tell us why, but never mind that. There's 20 runners. They're all good ones. 5-1, John Rahm. 15-2, Scott Scheffler. 11-1, Xander Schauffele. Oh, sorry, this is out of order. 9-1, Tony Finau. 12, Justin Thomas. 14, Fitzpatrick. Im and Hovland. 20, Burns. 20, Spieth. 22, Larry. 16, Morikawa. 16, it's a brilliant, brilliant field. I haven't even mentioned Tom Kim. So 20 of genuinely the world's best golfers convene where?
They convene at the Albany. And just while you just said, never mind Tiger Woods, I just want to make a quick point. I know this is going to be a long podcast and I'm not helping Matt's here, but I think it's important to mention that Tiger Woods says he's struggling to walk at the moment and he's due to play in the match on the 10th of December with Rory McIlroy. And I had a look at the match prices last night and nobody reacted to the news of Tiger Woods being unable to walk currently. It's Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy against Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth, you know, a hugely successful American President's Cup partnership. I just think that, you know, Spieth and Thomas are the outsiders. There's like a massive price for that.
I can't think that that will stand, though, if Woods doesn't play or...
Well, no, I think he's going to play, but there's so much money involved, he'll have to play. It's a 12-hole better ball contest. 12 rounds, yeah, that would test him.
I just think World Chess Championships, wouldn't it? It used to be sort of best of 67 and stuff.
You can get 11 to 10 Thomas and Spieth. If you're a high roller, blimmin' fill your blimmin' boots.
I am.
So what was the original question? Gone off the east.
No, I think I probably said something vague like they're all good ones, Steve. I was asking about the course. Give us the course.
Yes, Steve. Albany. Course, Albany, New Providence, the Bahamas, 7,414 yards, par 72, 5 par 5s, 5 par 3s. We have got a 20-man field. Tiger Woods went out and Sepp Straka was the lucky boy who got invited in.
That'll boost the crowds.
So Sepp Straka's in. So we've got 20. 72 holes, no cut. Albany has hosted since 2015. Straightforward track, open, rough free, link style. Lots of encouragement for big hitters to open their shoulders. But there's a lot of breeze in the forecast this week.
I was going to say, it always seems to be windy in that neck of the woods, doesn't it?
Might check the score in a little bit, yeah.
Okay, right. So you've gone 4-4-2. So we know you've got two selections here, just the two. Who is the first one, Steve?
I've got a very lanky centre forward here, a very powerful centre forward, Tony Finau, a 9-1, who is in the form of his life. He's won 3 of his last 7 tournaments. He's emphatically cured one of his main weaknesses by straightening it up from tee to green. He used to be long but wild. Now he's long and straight. It was accurate driving and fantastic putting, which won Finau the Houston Open last time out. Yeah, winning in that style shows what a complete player he's become. You know, inaccuracy and poor putting were the weaknesses. He's definitely cured the accuracy issue. He appears to be well on the way to sorting the putting issue. He putted so well in Houston. So, yeah, we're talking about a 33-year-old in his prime. There was that long gap, wasn't there, between the...
You got all emotional there. I thought you were going to break down. He goes, putted so well in Houston.
Yeah, I do love Tony. I mean, yeah, I'm so pleased to see him thriving. Yeah, he's a 33-year-old in his prime. There was lots of chatter, wasn't there, in that long gap between victory number one, victory number two. But now he's a prolific champion. He's elite. In his last 3 wins have been by emphatic margins. His maiden victory, you must remember, came on a tropical island, you know, Puerto Rico. I think he's going to thrive on another tropical island on Sunday. He finished runner-up on his Albany debut in 2018. Despite opening with a 72, and he was 10th in 2019, despite arriving in terrible form and opening with a 79, came roaring back. And he was 7th last year when again arriving in terrible form. So it's an important point is the only time he's turned up at Albany in good nick was for his debut. He had a 72 to settle in and then destroyed the gaff. So he loves this course. He's bursting with confidence. 5 par 5. I can't see him not contending.
Okay. So you've gone with the big target man up top. Have you got a little kind of beardo type next to him, a schemer, or have you gone light for light?
We're going to have to go long ball, I think, yeah, because the other one is Victor Hovland at 14-1, you know, muscly centre forward, who's got his ball striking back to a good level lately. He really caught the eye in Mexico with his iron play in the Mayakoba. He was 10th there, putted poorly. Prior to that, he was 4th in the Open, 5th at Wentworth, 5th in the Zozo Championship. He's been building back to the Hovland we all know and love. last time out 23rd in the DP World Tour Championship. Slight excuse there is clubs went missing again, turned up late, didn't get the perfect preparation he wanted for that Dubai event. But he's been very active lately, and this is important. There's a lot of players that have taken big breaks. Finau won a couple of weeks ago, and Hovland has been very active as well. So I want players that are in the groove, and I've got two there. We know how much Hovland likes these tropical locations. So his maiden win also, same as Finau, his maiden win came in Puerto Rico. He's won twice in Mayakoba, and he won this event last year. He's the defending champion this week. Hovland swaggered in for his debut last year and won four rounds in the 60s. So, yeah, I think a title defence entirely feasible.
Marvellous. Thank you very much, Steve. You've certainly been busy researching away for these three tournaments. So let's crystallise your thoughts and summarise your tips. And we'll start with the Australian Open.
4-4-2 formation. The defenders, Cameron Davis, Harrison Endicott, Hayden Hopewell and Jack Thompson.
The midfielders are in the South African Open.
Charles Schwartzel, Dean Burmester, Tom McGibbon, Jaden Trey Shaper.
And then the two up top in the Hero Open. No, is it the Hero what? I'm doing that thing again where I only remember one word. It's the Hero...
World Challenge. It used to be the Chevron, didn't it, in the Golden
Yeah,
years.
That's it, yeah.
Tony Finau, Victor Hovland.
Lovely, brilliant stuff, Steve. I forgot to ask, by the way, last week you were telling us you were going to a barbecue last Friday to watch the England game. Are you an advocate of winter barbecues after that?
The barbecue was a big success, and then the football was just so disappointing, wasn't it? I'd recommend winter barbecues. I wouldn't recommend watching England and expect them to get loads of goals.
Okay, fair enough. Well, they play tonight against Wales, don't they? Give us a quick score prediction.
1-1 and several broken legs.
I tell you what, there's been a lot in this. There's a lot of clashes of heads. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, I see England picking up injuries tonight. Yeah. If Wales are already out of the competition, it could turn nasty. I'm worried about tonight's fixture. I've lost a lot of faith in England. I must admit, I've jumped ship to Brazil now. I think Brazil are going to win. I think you can have Brazil.
Terrible price.
I know they've got some tough games to come, but they look the most impressive by far, don't they?
France.
I think Brazil, Michael van Gerwen, World Championship double. I think that's the bet.
Terrible price. I'll have France, you have Brazil. Next time we meet up, the winner can buy the other one a half of lager or something, yeah?
Okay, that's fair.
All right, Steve, thank you very much indeed. We will be back remotely next week when the tournaments we're previewing are. I can't remember. What have we got? We've got the Alfred Dunhill, haven't we?
Yeah, we've got the Alfred Dunhill and the QBE shootout. Yeah. We're always remotely, aren't we? What did you mean by that?
Well, you know, I'd mention about the fact we might meet up in person, but that only seems to happen about once a year.
I see what you mean. Yeah. Well, if we get the each way treble up this week on Davis, Schwartzel and Finau, then we can, we can play golf every day.
We go to Qatar, can't we, and watch the rest of the World Cup.
We go to Qatar and go to the Melbourne Sambo. Yeah, there's a lot to look forward to if we get the each way treble this week.
There's a lot to look forward to even if we don't. Let's bet responsibly. Let's not lose any money that's going to make us feel bad about ourselves. It's just a bit of fun. Thank you very much, Steve. Thank you to producer Sam. Thank you most of all, though, for watching The Sweet Spot. We're back next Tuesday.